Welcome to another edition of Strange New Pod. I am your Fleet Admiral and host, Julian Brown, alongside the best bridge crew this side of a red directive. Vice Admiral Eric is here, and we finally were able to retrieve his pattern from the buffer. Welcome back, buddy. He's like, it's only been 2 weeks.
Yeah. I was here the whole time.
It's only been 2 weeks. Meanwhile, I was like, shit, that show was back in February, wasn't it? Oh, boy. Captain Hawk is here, wondering how many times the Sung is going to be referenced in Discovery this year. I mean, I was just waiting for a text from Giraffe about Sung, right. But we'll get to that. Oh, boy. Speaking of, Subcommander Giraffe is here, ready to talk Romulans and her husband's more insane reaction to this episode than hers. And she's still going to scream a lot. That's going to happen tonight. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not mad. I'm disappointed.
I'm not mad. Actually, I like that. I like that. Disappointed mother. And finally, Commander MC is here, ready to somehow connect everything we see in this season to the Kelvinverse, because for once, I actually think they are going to connect the Kelvinverse to this season, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think everything should be connected to the Kelvinverse all the time, always.
Yeah. Jedi Cat 71, Julian, I hope you got a good night's sleep after the premiere.
No, we did not.
Oh, boy. I got home at 3:15, didn't go to bed till 3:45. I'm hurting, guys. I'm hurting. But I'm here.
Being old.
Yep, it is called being old. Guys, welcome back to Discovery. How we doing?
Doing great. Good. Now this is Discovery's back.
Yeah.
Yeah. MC reminded me before everybody got here that this is her first time talking Discovery on the pod. That's how long it's been. Since Discovery's been off.
Oh my God. It's been a long road.
Getting from there to here. Tara says it was worth it, Julian. It was. I don't know if my neck agrees with that right now, but... who knows? This week, what are we doing this week, guys? It is the final season of Discovery. It has finally arrived, and we're here to review the two premiere episodes, Red Directive and Under the Twin Moons. We're going to go over that the key points from each episode so we don't go too crazy on time because, oh boy. But we're going to break down that big reveal at the end of 501. And if you haven't been following our social medias tonight, Sonequa Martin Green's going to be on the pod. And no, that is not a joke. We have my interview with Sonequa Martin Green coming up in just a little bit. She was a pleasure to talk to. Cannot wait to show that. That's part one. We'll actually have a little bit more with Sonequa on next week's show, along with Wilson Cruz. We have a lot to get to. It's two episodes. Discovery isn't fucking around with runtimes this year. Each episode running at just about an hour. So we're going to get to this real quick. Patrons, we love you, but we do have a red directive tonight. Got to keep things moving. So we love you. We'll shout you out next week. But a very quick shout out to our amazing Badmirals, our EPs, Simon Stager, Commander Chris, the Chief, Ernesto Castagna, Chris Waterman, and Tara Pollen. Thank you for keeping the Spore Drive running. Thank you for letting us be able to keep going on more and more red directives. Yeah. Very quick. In the news, if you are new to Strange New Pod, if you're like, ooh, Discovery, I'm going to watch this, and you found us, we are a live after show. That's why you're watching us live right now, which means this is a spoiler cast. So if you haven't watched the episodes yet, kindly hit that ding ding and make that really, I did the wrong side, ding ding, and self-transport yourself away. And we'll see you tomorrow. When you've watched it, you can watch the replay. That should be said that from now on, spoilers are happening. So that was your warning. Thank you, everyone, for watching, participating, raising money for ALS research, everything in our Last Days of Disco podcast festival. Thank you to Giraffe for being the scheduling queen. Thank you to the Dura Sisters Pod for being excellent partners. We got some beautiful messages from people who were able to watch every single show, 12 podcasts, 7 days. It was a blast. So thank you. Hawk.
Yo.
That's a pretty nice hoodie you got on, sir.
You like this?
I do.
This is a wonderful hoodie I got last year from Heroes and Villains. Should I show the back of it?
Why not show us your backside? Come on, do a twirl.
Show us.
Oh no, you disappeared. He self-transported away. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Okay. That was all function. This is a little hard, but yes, wonderful hoodie from Heroes and Villains. Amazing stitching. I love the logoing and lettering on the sides. And I believe it is still available.
It sure is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I just want to say that it's one more proof that Hawk is most probably a hologram.
Yes.
It's either that or I'm Davros, right?
It definitely Davros. Mm. Yep. Yeah, 20% off your first order at Heroes and Villains. I'm wearing their Starfleet medical shirt tonight because I still have my heart racing from last night's event. So in case I need like a hypospray, you could also get this at Heroes and Villains. 20% off your first order using our code STRANGE. Their stuff is awesome, and we love being partnered with them. Let's get this damn show on the road. We are moving quickly.
Wait. Are you guys watching the screen? You should watch the screen.
Oh,
yeah,
I'm watching screen. You know why?
Why? Oh, I see your awesome new overlay.
This is all disco theme. But you know what else is disco theme? the sticker for this quarter.
Oh, we got news.
Ready?
Ready.
3, 2, 1.
Oh my God.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
You can't see my arms, but the goosebumps that I have right now. That is sexy.
I got to see this a few days ago, and I gave it a
big I was like, is this up. Good, Hawk?
This is
is this good, Hawk? Oh, my God. I love it. I love it. I think that's so good that for $5, $2 and up, you'll get a sticker. $10, you always get something unique. I think we'll turn that into a magnet as well for $10 patrons. So look forward to that. I know we're not doing patrons, but we did get two new patrons today, and they've been longtime members, so I am going to shout them out real quick. Welcome to the collective, Eric and Trouble, who are on our Discord. We love you. Thank you so much for becoming patrons. One more Romulan operative. always. Let's do the Strange New Loop because it's gonna be spicy like those Andorian Federation drinks.
No, my imagination is going wild.
Well, it should, because of all the places the reveal of the chase could take us. Where would you like it to take us the most? It's a loaded question. Yeah, Hawk, I saw your head go up first. Go ahead.
Since they've been referenced twice already in the same season than that, wouldn't it be wild if they had to go to the Breen homeworld to look for one of the pieces?
Mm. Would love that. That would be unique. I'm into it. Get to see the Breen. We haven't seen them since what? Lower Decks?
DS9.
Yeah,
Lower Decks.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Lower Decks, we might as well see the Tholians Decks as well, right?
Yep. The Tholian Imperium. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
That'd be nice.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we've not seen the Tholian since
Enterprise. Yeah. Enterprise. They teased us with the Strange Worlds season 1 or 2 trailer with the web, but it wasn't. So,
Yeah.
Who else has got something?
You kind of spoiled it in my introduction. The Kelvinverse.
I know.
Yeah, set up Kelvin 4.
I mean, it's a good idea, because with the Romulan supernova and all this, it's like right around the corner of the time the ship disappeared, huh?
Yeah. It is. It is. I like it.
That'd be complicated, but that'd be cool. I don't know how they can do that in 10 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Eric the Red writes,
give me one with Kelvin the Spock interacting with Prime Michael. Like,
yeah,
I want it so bad.
Eric the Red writes, disco, Breen there, done that. Boo. Oh,
go stand in a corner and think about what you did.
Yeah, I like it.
I do like it.
I learned that there are a world championship of puns. So if anybody wants to.
Did you see that one earlier in that regarding Senator Vrenik? He likes to say Jolon false.
Jolon false.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Damn, it's going to be a long one, huh?
Yeah.
Like you didn't know that. Who else has got one here?
It'd be cool if we went to the Kelleran home world.
The who?
The Kelleran. Like the species that Callum Keith Rennie
is. Oh, right. It's a very subtle DS9
throwback. DS9 one.
Yeah.
What was it called? Armageddon or something like that? Where Bashir and the bioweapons episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yep. Yeah. I know which one.
The Quickening. Yep. Isn't it?
Is it?
I think.
No, the Quickening is the one with like a disease. I think the one they fake Bashir and O'Brien's death, I think, because they're like getting rid of bioweapons.
Again.
I mean,
I think I would like them to go to, maybe the Medusan or the Organian, like some non. How do you say that? Like
corporeal
species, that non-corporeal species. Like, I'd like to see something a bit weird.
I like it. This has nothing to do with the Strangely Loop, but Jedi Cat writes, who else is already loves Captain Raynor? Captain Raynor is my favorite thing about Discovery right now. And no, little humble brag, I've seen 2 more episodes than everybody. And no spoilers, he gets just better and better.
Oh my God, yes.
Amazing character. I have a bit of a unique one.
The progenitor homeworld?
Oh, no, I remembered. Well, yeah, we could do that too. So, you know how in season 3 and season 4 and now in season 5, we still haven't seen the Klingons yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what if we took a little bit back of a trip to Borath? Because what a place to hide one of these puzzle pieces, and a place where time is constantly out of flux. And every season has found a way to pay tribute to Kenneth Mitchell somehow. And it would be really cool to have maybe like a descendant of T'Navik down there. Something like that. And he has to, give them a hint or maybe just straight up have a puzzle piece. Cool way to bring the Klingons back in a very like untraditional Klingon way. So
the only thing is how a Romulan ship at that time would like go anywhere near there.
This dude was like had the bigger picture in mind, right?
It would be neat if he got together with all the scientists that found that the progenitors.
Except the Cardassian, right? Because the Cardassian did the sabotage at the end.
Yeah, true, but
maybe we get to see the Orion. Homeworld.
Hey. Ooh. Yeah.
I think they're saving that, more of that for
Lower Decks.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, but like action, live action. That's
true. Yeah.
And future one.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's all future.
Is there anything in here? Colin, does anyone think the progenitors look a little too much like the founders? Well, they were introduced before the founders. So.
Yeah.
I also believe that one of the progenitors was played by Salome Jens, who was the female changeling.
Correct. Yep. So a little bit too on the nose. Yeah. Anything else on the Strangely Loop? Good. We're moving right along tonight. I like it, which means it is our review of episode 501, Red Directive. Our order tonight's going to go. So we're resetting for the season, so in order of who's been here. So it's going to go Eric, Hawk, Giraffe, MC, followed by myself. Let's do this. Like I said at the top, we're going to go down some bullet points. We're not doing crazy like deep dives into act by act, because otherwise we'll be here till 3 a.m. and I don't need another 3 a.m. night. Let's talk the Red Directive, chasing Maul and Locke, Michael and Raynor, kind of their clash of wills, this kind of first like half hour of the episode. What did you guys think, Eric?
I love that this show started off with the crew of the Discovery in a time of peace. Like, they've always been in so much conflict since the first season that this crew was just like finally chill. Like, at the beginning, they're like, they're living life. And then all of a sudden, this Red Directive that we've never seen before, never heard about, but apparently it's like Mission Impossible-esque.
We will disavow you.
exactly. Like, it's to the point that Kovich is like, you can do anything. Like, war crimes be damned, this has to be done. And I love that Michael throughout the whole Red Directive first chase scene and finding the Romulan ship, she always kept to her morals. Like, there was never a chance where she was like, you know what, I have to get this done. But she was always thinking about, you know, her ship, the other ship that was there, the Rainer's ship, which looks amazing.
Yep. The Antares. Yep.
Antares, yeah. And their crew. So it was such a cool thing. Seeing the Romulan ship was like, oh fuck, they are going hard with this season.
It was gorgeous.
And, yeah. Seeing a mummified Romulan inside was very cool. Not mummified, it was decomposing.
That was mummified.
It was the mummified, you imagine?
Yeah, totally mummified. Yeah.
Yep. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. And then we get to meet Locke and Maul, which you know, later with the android, the naming of them is so good. Like, it runs off your tongue, just like, oh yeah, that it feels so cool. They're great villains.
Okay, I like Fred.
Fucking Fred.
Yeah, exactly. I love Fred. I love that they're like Bonnie and Clyde. Like, there's this like bank robber old-esque feeling to them, and they're just like guns to the wind. They're just like, fuck, we're gonna do whatever we want, we're having fun, we're gonna shoot everything, and we're just gonna have a blast doing it. I've been watching Young Guns recently, so that feeling is just so perfect. I love seeing the chase scenes, which we'll talk about when we get to the planet, are so top notch. Like, everything is firing on all cylinders. Like, the special effects and the sound design in this whole beginning is just beautiful and amazing. And I don't know where I'm going from here. Oh, Michael and Rainer's Clash of Wills. That's a great intro. Just from the voice of Callum Keith Rennie, and you can already tell that they're getting on each other's nerves, but they know that what they're doing. You can tell they're just not fighting with each other. There's a different set of wills. Like, they know what they need to do. And then seeing them on the bridge in hologram form was wonderful. And then we'll talk about it later. Wait, yeah.
Yeah, we'll you're it. Good. Yep. Huck.
This was the first episode was a really impressive start to the whole season. And yes, I like that they're in a time of peace. And yes, that I like that the story going forward doesn't, it sort of has that kind of like, you know, fate of the universe, but not like so like as depressing as the DMA was in that, where it's like, you know, wiping out everything. I love the idea of the Red Directive because it gives us more time to spend with Dr. Kovich and that in the, you know, the room of silence and that he.
David Cronenberg is a national fucking treasure.
Our nation, remember?
A double nation. Yeah, you're. Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go. Canada.
I don't know if there was a Canadian filmmaker that was as important as David Cronenberg in that. You know, we've had some big ones in that. You know, recently, I think Denis Villeneuve is pretty much our big guy, but Cronenberg was the guy that really got everything started. So yeah, more him all the time. Chasing Maul and Locke, I love them as sort of the villains in this series because, like, you know, it's, you get, as Eric pointed out right at the bat, it's, they're not, you know, it's like plans upon plans, people and that. They're just two kids are in love and that, you know, it's like you're tear-assing across the universe and that. We find out later on that they're couriers, but yeah. It's kind of a villain that we haven't really seen before in Discovery, and I really enjoy that. Love Fred. I saw my message, Julian. Is that some type of android?
We'll get to Fred in a little bit.
Okay, but Michael and Rainer's Clash of Wills. Yeah, let me say, Callum Keith Rennie makes a stronger impression on me in the second episode than this one. It's like I got the impression it was like, oh, okay, so, you know. One of the kind of burn era war captains in that for the Starfleet, you know, it's like he's clashing up against little Michael and her, you know, her moral principles and that. Like, that's a little too far ahead, but yeah, overall, it was just such a strong episode. I've been loving everything I've seen so far.
Nice. A draft before you go, I want to read a comment from the chat real quick. Lizard King Slawinski says they would have been friends with the evil cowboy from season 3, referring to Maul and Locke. I actually disagree. I think that they are a very specific breed of courier. And I think that the guy who they called Sweetheart, I forget his name, is just a piece of shit, like an awful human being. So I think they would have just like not done business with him. I guess it's debatable. You don't know like what the relationships are in the courier circle, but it's a great point. A great idea to bring up. Dref, what do you think about the kind of opening half hour, the chase and the warp bubble, all that?
Everybody needs to stop saying the chase. Because every time I'm like, the chase.
Trigger word?
Pursuing Maul and Locke.
They're pursuing, yeah. I have to say that when I watched this episode on my laptop, I was kind of underwhelmed because there was a lot of like things and going and like my pet peeve is like the 4 hours earlier or something like this. I'm like, please, come on. This is not like, you know, a sitcom from the 90s. Like, it's very NCIS to me, you know? And, but seeing these, I've seen only the first one. Seeing the first episode on a giant screen is absolutely incredible. Like, these episodes are made in a cinematic way. You need to see them on the bigger screen. It hits differently. It really hits differently. And I know there's been preview and like premiere nights. There in San Diego, there is a showing for First Contact Day. So check out your nerdy places around you. If you have the opportunity to see them on the big screen, it's a game changer. I was into the whole Romulan thing, as you can imagine, just gorgeous. And I feel that Maul and Lack, it's very hard to say, Freddy's right. Maul and Lack are going to be such interesting characters. First of all, the design of the character. I'm a bit underwhelmed by Maul because like it's very Shin-Hati-esque. Yeah. And I'm like, we need to stop like having the woman with like the short white hair and like the smoky eye. I'm like, okay, like I've seen that character, like that character design in so many sci-fi.
All the way down to Blade Runner, man.
Yeah.
Farscape. Yeah. I mean, we've seen it, you know? So I'm like, okay, but Locke, the makeup, I'm like, what's that dude about? Why is he like all liquid under the helmet? Like, why is he, like, what is he? What is he? You know, so that's already a mystery. Like, I'm already into, you know, that character. I want to know what happened. Like, is he like kind of a Balthazar Edison, you know, result of stuff? Ah, I see.
Bringing in Kelvin.
And I love how Disco portrays love relationship, because you know right away that these two are like an item, and that, you know, then that's going to be, yeah, Bonnie and Clyde-esque. Like, it's going to be ride or die. And I'm here about this. Like, I don't think we've seen that so much in Star Trek.
We haven't. So like, and yeah, like, even more than Maul, like, Locke, and hats off to Elias Dufexis for just like killing it in these first couple episodes. Yeah, they pull that off very, very well.
I mean, it's like, hard to be the antagonist and not be like, I hate them because they're bad guys. Because I don't hate them. I love them.
Oh yeah, I'd be the friend. I'd be like, yes, let's rob the Romulans. Let's shoot the synth. 100%. Like, they're the fun guys. Like, I'm like, I'm about this. So yeah, I have to say that these two episodes also work better together. I for a long time only had watched the first one, and I thought that Captain Rayner was kind of, you know, flat, like he's an angry dude, and I'm like, I've seen a lot of angry old white guy. I'm sorry, he's not old, but you know what I mean.
He's getting there. He's getting on there. He wasn't a spring chicken in Battlestar.
No.
Nope. You know, I've seen that character, like the guy that is pissed off, like the war captain and so on, and I'm like, okay. So it's true that they did very well releasing these two episodes together, and it needs to be said, because I feel that, for example, I think Picard, like the two first episodes were working better together, if I remember well, but were separated. And I'm really glad that everybody gets to see these two episodes the first week, yeah, because mm-hmm, only one would have been.
We said this exact same thing about Discovery Season 3, that those first two episodes when we reviewed it should have been together.
Yeah. And I have to say that I saw the episode in a room full of people watching that on a giant screen. And the moment where Michael does her freaking tumble, like to go sit into the captain chair, was fucking epic on a giant screen. Like, I was like, yeah. Like, this was so good. And I hope they do more like crazy. I mean, it's like a bit ridiculous on the edge, but like at the same time, so absolutely badass that I'm into it.
I just want to throw this in. Callum Keith Rennie is 63.
No, he's not.
He is. He does not look
that. Damn.
Okay, old then.
MC, what do you got?
I agree with Giraffe about the in media res beginning. I'm not the biggest fan of that because it always feels like such a cheat to me to be like, here's an action scene, but no, actually, it's we're going to have this very calm scene at a party, which I really liked the scene at the party. I like how just absolutely fucking bitter Stamets was. About the Spore Drive program being shut down, which was the Spore Drive program ever really ever going? Like,
the answer is no.
1,000 years.
Well, it wasn't until Tarka took the only prototype. Tarka.
Yeah.
And Maul and Locke, I think these two are so interesting. Adrenaline junkie, completely in love with each other. You know, one of my earlier fandoms is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, so I immediately think Spike and Joe.
Yeah,
great comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's always so much fun to have characters like this who are the antagonists, but there is this humanizing thing of them just being in love with each other. And I think that is going to go to some interesting places over the season and could potentially cause problems for them. I don't know. I've only seen the first two episodes, unlike Julie. But they've certainly put that in to create a very specific dynamic. And it is a cool dynamic to have because I get the impression from these characters that all they have is each other. They are just very much, you know, they know of other careers, but they don't care about it. It's, you know, they're doing their own thing. And I like that. And Michael and Raynar, well, first of all, I love Raynar and I've loved Callum Keith Rennie for, oh God, wait. I'm
way too long.
Very sad, very sad to say how long I've loved him for. And seeing him on
from Due South. Is that where you're going? Yeah, you are.
he's really great in the first episode. I do think that he is more interesting in the second, but that's characters tend to get more interesting the more you get to know them. And there is this interesting dynamic set up between him and Michael because I don't even know if it's because Michael didn't really experience the burn. I think it's just totally who Michael is. Like, even, we saw Michael during wartime and she was very much, you know, not that person who would do the things that Raynor is willing to do. And that is kind of the perfect foil for her, especially when you have is it Kovach, Cronenberg's character,
Dr. Kovach.
Yeah, Dr. Kovach, who is such a sketch guy.
I don't know if he's sketch. We don't know what he is. Like, we just don't know what he is in relation to Starfleet. I don't think he's like a bad
that makes him sketch if you don't know he is in relation to Starfleet.
He's absolutely sus. Like 1,000% sus. Yes.
Yeah.
He's got cool quarters.
And he's somebody who'd be like, Red Directive, do what you have to do. And I loved the fucking Matrix special room for them to talk about things.
The Infinity Room. I don't know.
It sounds like a VIP club.
It does.
It does, yeah.
All that was missing were strippers and champagne.
You're not on the list.
Not on the list, no. I really liked Kovich, right? Because we've seen Kovich be a dick, like, in previous seasons, but it's, like, kind of, like, the loving dick. And now he's just, like, being... And we don't know if he's Section 31. I tend to think he's Section 31. Not using the words. But he's being Section 31 dick. He's like, oh, no, your phasers are set to stun? Lethal force. I love when they go on the Romulan ship, how the phasers, you don't need a phaser rifle anymore. You could just be like, hey, programmable matter, make my gun bigger. And it turns into a phaser rifle. Dope.
And you know what the difference is between a phaser and a rifle, right?
It's longer.
One, you use two hands for the rifle. Fire. Like that joke of Lordex will never leave my mind every time I see a phaser rifle. It's just a phaser you hold with two hands. That's all.
I loved the Romulan ship. I love the aesthetic of the Romulan ship. It has to be said, Gersha, you queen, you got the 90s Romulan outfit like perfectly as Giraffe rubs her Romulan eyebrows. It was just
say those outfits are ugly, but
she made them look great. Right. Maul and Locke, I'm all on board with them. I'm trying to go fast because we have a lot more to get to. My favorite part so far has been everything Michael and Rayner, even just the stuff inside the warp bubble and her taking the ride and him being a dick and not releasing the ship. I also love when Maul and Locke do their little, like, we're going to send 20 different warp signatures so you can't find us.
Like the Serenity.
Serenity.
Yep, like the Serenity. And I like that.
Didn't say it, but I didn't want to sound like a nerd, but yes.
Yeah. In this group?
Right. And I really like that this is how, like, because we're not really going to talk about it. We're going to get right to Book and Michael doing something else. But this is how we get Book back, too. Because Kovich is like, you fucked up. You're on a red directive and you didn't find them. And she's like, okay, well, I know someone and this is how we get Book back. So I thought this whole first act, like, did really well. Let's move on. Let's talk about the settlement on Tatooine. Did I just say Tatooine? I'm sorry.
Yes, oh, my God.
Let's talk about, did that on your purpose.
No, I was being sarcastic. I did do it on purpose. Let's talk about the Tatooine settlement. Let's talk about Fred, the Sung-type android, which looked so much like Brent Spiner.
So good.
Saving that colony, the whole speeder bike chase, and you know, like the two starships, like, you know, bracing the avalanche. And then... what I thought was very unexpected, Michael and Book breaking up. Let's talk about Tatooine. Eric.
I love Tatooine. I thought it looked really cool. Very sci-fi ethnic as it is. Giraffe knows what I'm talking about.
Giraffe's going to shake her head this entire show.
I enjoyed Fred's workshop. It felt like Indiana Jones, like they're going in and talking about antiquities. I thought that whole sequence was amazing. I love Fred. I wanted more Fred. And then they killed Fred and I was sad.
Fred ain't dead.
Fred is not dead. Hashtag Fred lives. I have to say, I've watched only episode 1 and 2. I have to, like, everybody to know that. So
didn't they extract his brain later?
He's a Sung-type android. Must be 12
They've
others.
Got the head.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. You can regrow them from the head, no? They did that to that.
That's true.
No. As long as they got the head, they're fine.
He's 600 years old. They'll just put a new body on him.
He's older than that. He's what?
8?
No, they say he's 600 something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just remember the line was he hadn't seen something like that in
500 years.
I thought it was 627 years.
Guys, we got 2 episodes to talk about.
Sorry.
I thought that sequence was amazing. I like that Maul, because of what happened to Maul, Locke just fucking flipped. And killed Fred to sadness. The chase afterwards, I know we're going to keep on saying chase in this episode, but I love that sequence. I thought it was so cool. It was very Star Wars-esque, but also mixed with the Italian job, the editing was insane. They did that split screen thing that they only do in car chase movies. So I did really like that. I like when movies and TV shows do something unexpected, and I don't think I've ever seen a Star Trek or sci-fi movie do dynamic editing like that.
Yeah.
The issue with the avalanche, I thought was really cool. I like that Rainer really liked his 70% right comment.
The way he's like, yeah, for the win. Oh,
70%.
Shit. 70%. But what's better, Eric, remember when then they launched the photon torpedoes and they're in an avalanche? He goes, huh? Oh, shit. It's just like, huh?
It was very funny. I find it funny whenever they have like land vehicles in these types of shows, because they have ships that fly. So I never understood why there would be like sand crawlers and stuff. Whatever. The whole sequence was gorgeous. The two ships going in there with their shields to block the avalanche was very cool. And then we get a really emotional scene with Book and Michael, which I assume they had broken up already. So it sort of was like, oh, okay. Because they had talked about how they hadn't seen each other for such a long time, like earlier. And then Stamets was like, well, I shouldn't have mentioned Book. So I assume they had broken up at that point. But the fact that they made it final really made me sad, because I really like them as a couple and I want them back together.
Fucking agreed. 100%. Hawk.
Where to begin? Fred. When I saw him, it was I couldn't get over like the resemblance to young Brent Spiner and that. I was just I just looked up the actor's name. I think it's J. Adams Brown.
He looked familiar.
Yeah. So spot on to like, you know, Data back in the first season of TNG. I loved his interactions with Maul and Locke, especially dissecting their names and that. On a side note, it's like, so it reminded me of that Community episode where we met Pierce Hawthorne's father. I don't know if you remember that one, Eric.
The Obit
of racism.
Yes.
That was, it was great. It was weird because the first time I watched that episode, I got up to that part and I was messaging Julian. My internet cut out and I didn't get back to it until much later. I was like, wow, I was so excited to have Fred. And I was like, oh my God, they shot him.
Oh no, they killed Fred.
But you're right. Once they have the head, that's all they need. And like, you know, in 32nd century, it's like, you know, the impossibilities of mimicking like the work are they're not there anymore. And that they could easily build him a new body.
Don't you think it's forbidden?
In the 32nd century?
No, I mean, they built Gray a body.
Yeah, exactly.
A certain body?
For a synth.
For a synth.
Yeah, well...
Wait, why would it be forbidden?
Not in the 32nd century.
It happened.
Yeah, but they lifted the synth ban.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did. Yeah, the chase in the desert was great. And Eric, to answer your question, of course they have bikes like that. It's like, this is like, you know, this is the part of like Star Trek that usually only takes place in the novels where we see like the rest of the galaxy and that.
That's fair.
Yeah, basically has to cope with like, much less technology than the Federation has.
I mean, if Kirk gets a dirt bike,
yeah,
they might as well get.
Yeah, exactly. Giraffe, you're absolutely right. These kinds of sequences really need to be seen on a big screen. And that this was a lot of action, you know, especially for the first episode. And it's not just one. We had not only the beginning like action sequence and that, which was amazing and that, but we got this one in the same episode and that, and seeing like both the ships using their warp and their shields and that to stop an avalanche, loved it. Yeah. I'm good.
MC.
It's weird. Giraffe.
I did it. It's the first one of the new season, Giraffe.
He knew he didn't want me to speak. Okay. Can we stop with the motherfucking Shai Hulud planet of the, like, oh my God. when I saw
Lassana Gaib.
That fucking yellow filter. I was like, they better fucking not. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's go. Let's like wear veil and have like a like Arabic sounding music and get shortcut through the spice market. I was like, what is this? 1960s? Like, what is this? At least Tatooine was Tatooine because it was shot in Northern Africa. But like, you have like these like incredible fucking walls that can like create any kind of civilization, and you give me like a made up American vision, Middle Eastern yellow filter like thing. Like, that was so disappointing. I was so disappointed that they could not come up with a better fucking ID than like a recycled like set. It's the final season. You're going to give me like the fake Arabic planet with sand and like spice sand people. Like, there's already Dune on the cinema. I'm that one is okay.
They're getting their rocks off of Dune. Like, it's popular. Yeah, we're going to do Dune, baby. Let's go.
I mean, that was so sad. That was so sad. I was very disappointed by Discovery on this. Like, give us a Strange New World. Like, give us like, what's Talgara 4? Like,
like a water planet? We don't see those.
Made up like a stupid planet. Like, make up something that at least is not like low key racist. Like, come on. Like, it's like it looks like in the Aladdin like theme park. Like,
it is very so, Aladdin.
I rolled my eyes so fucking bad. But yeah, I love Fred. Fred fucking rules. Fred had tried to shoot people with a phaser from like 400 years ago that doesn't work.
Dude had
like,
a horrible
that
aim.
That gave me life. I was like, yes, I know that guy, you know?
I thought that phaser was one of Locke and Maul's and it was like ID'd to their hands.
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was an old like Discovery phaser that he had here, and I was like, and it was not working.
It's not gonna work.
You know?
Yeah, because they had dropped a bunch of items off in that, right?
He just grabbed something and tried to like shoot them. I think it was funny. Then they shoot him, and to be honest, when he first showed up, I prayed that Brent Spiner was not gonna show up. I was like, if he shows up, I'm quitting. Like, love the man. I love him. I need to know what he has on Paramount. I at this point, that would have been ridiculous. Like, let's be honest. So
when Fred comes back, it's going to be Brent Spiner.
Right?
Oh, my God.
It's just going to be AI, like, deep fake Brent Spiner.
So, I love the speeder chase or whatever it's called, the thing they do that, like,
it was 100% a speeder chase.
That was this. And I didn't know an avalanche could not be made of snow. I thought it was called a landslide, but you know, you live, you learn.
You live, you learn.
The first time I saw the thing with the ship pinned into the ground, I was like, I don't know if I need to laugh, be impressed. I was like so taken, like I was like, what are we doing? What is going on? But then I saw it on the big screen, and I think it was cool. I think it's something we never saw, and at least it's not a ship throwing a rock again. So, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah.
This is new. Yeah. Because I was like, if they grab a rock and throw it with the ship, I'm going to be mad again.
We should have done a ticker for how many times Jurassic Asia is going to quit Star Trek tonight.
There were many moments in that first episode where I was like, Do not do that.
They test me, and I will have them.
It's the pain box, you know, like. So I think it was like a cool action sequence, to be honest. And I'm glad, like, we see like kind of like badass stuff like this in Star Trek. Like, that was like a very cool, like, you know, like scene, like to engineer and like create. Yeah. That was like pretty cool. I want to say that also every time I hear Antares, I think of Nichelle Nichols, and I don't know if it's for this, but I think it's pretty cool. And I'm so sad that they broke up that I just don't accept it.
I don't accept it either. That's where I'm at. It's going to be the one thing that I talk about on this subject.
They're going to be back together by the end.
This shit pisses me the fuck off. I'm going to I'm gonna go hard on this in a few minutes.
No, yeah, they need to make up. I mean, like, and we all know makeup sex is the best sex. So, like,
it's a good point. That. It's a really good point. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yep. MC.
I don't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere.
Get off my bridge. I mean,
are you f***ing kidding me?
And kicked off the pod, Anakin.
We do not bestow the title of master on you.
This is outrageous.
I didn't have as many deep thoughts about the planet as Giraffe did, but it did feel like I've seen this planet fucking in every single franchise ever and in Star Trek before. So I was not like super into that. So I'm just going to move past that and talk about Fred. And I think, like, when I was giving reactions to you guys, the first thing I said about Fred was, did something happen to Brent Spiner?
Are we not aware that he disappeared? Who's holding him hostage?
No, it's not who's holding his hostage. They finally found the dirt, burned it, and fired him.
But the guy who played Fred was great. Like, he was the, like, 1989 Brent Spiner, just, you know, for the modern day. I thought he did a fantastic job. I do hope that in episode 5 or 6, we meet Ted.
Wait, oh yeah, okay, I like, yeah, all right,
my brother.
Yeah, it's like on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where they kept on bringing back, was it Patton Oswalt as,
yeah,
like,
yeah. Yes. Yeah, 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 yeah.
The action sequences in this whole thing were really great. I don't never watch on my computer. I'm always watching on my large television. So I feel like Discovery really delivered in this episode, in a way that I think other treks that, you know, people think are more action oriented than Discovery, where people complain about it's just Michael crying. No, this one has a lot of action in it, and I think is some of the best action that we've seen in Star Trek in a long time. Sure. As for Book and Michael breaking up, first of all, I love Book and Michael together, so I want them to be together. But I also hate this idea that we have to have the lead female character not in a relationship. Because
not just
also,
the lead female character, but a black female lead character.
I was going to get there too. no, but I mean, like, it's you know, I'm glad that somebody else, you know, said it as well. Because, yeah, Black women should be able to be in a relationship. That does not happen a lot. And with Michael, like, think about Michael and Book together. They were having problems last season. Like, can we please let her be happy?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, I'm pretty sure they're probably gonna, like, forget that they broke up, which I'd be fine with.
That's the hope.
You know, maybe we're just going to get into a friends with benefits situation until they're like, oh, yeah, we're together again. So, sure, why not? I think the one comment I had about this entire scene, because I was blanking out the fact that they were breaking up, is that David Ajala looked so fucking hot.
He did that sexy pose on the bike. He was like, yeah.
Is he not looking hot, though?
I mean, I know that, but he was like burning a hole in my TV for this particular scene when he was just like posing on that bike. It was just a chef's kiss.
He's a sexy man. I mean, yeah.
He is.
So someone very like early when we started said, talking about the different premieres, that everybody kept saying that these looked gorgeous on the big screen. And we keep talking about how cinematic Discovery is. And holy fuck, yes. Like, honestly, these episodes and pretty much all previous seasons of Disco, season 2, when they went to the, I forget the camera type that they went to, Frakes talked about it a lot in audio commentary. This is the playbook for giving us, and I'm not just saying this to be like hopes and dreams. I really do think it could happen. This is the playbook for getting us Discovery movies, because we're seeing how good it looks on screen, on the big screen, right? How good it sounds on the big screen. After all the press shit last night, I walked into the first episode at the desert chase scene, and holy fuck, is this show cinematic. Is the two ships digging a hole in the ground and like creating a shield barrier absolutely fucking absurd? 100%. Is it one of the coolest things I've ever seen in Star Trek? 100%. Like,
absolutely.
And it looks so cool on a big screen. Let me go off on Michael and Book breaking up. You guys know I like to ship people. This is absurd. It's fucking absurd, and it comes out of fucking nowhere. Because I just no, it does. I see that look. I just finished watching season 4. And we know what happens with Michael and when she thinks Book almost dies. And when they get back and he comes back and 10C brings him back, that emotion and that embrace and her feeling of just emptiness the minute he gets transported onto his ship to go help refugees, she is broken. And maybe it wasn't written in a book anywhere and we just have to kind of make shit up. She couldn't deal with feeling that emptiness, so she decided to not contact and move on. But I fucking hate it. Because she says it at the end of season 4. He is my someone. He was my one. And that's true. He has been with her since literally falling out of a wormhole. This is like that like star-crossed love bullshit. And you don't fuck around with this in TV. And I hate it. And I hope by like mid-season we're done with this bullshit. Because I think it was not a good idea.
I'm worried that they're going to save this for the end of the season. Like, it's going to be like, oh, we're really all happy. They're going to get together. Not. I fucking hate that.
Because I'm really unhappy about this in an otherwise fantastic episode. Speaking of, I asked Anequa Martin-Green about this. I also asked her about her relationship with Rainer. We are going to watch that interview right now. If my co-hosts can mute their mics, we're gonna watch this interview. So, Eric, hit it.
Hi, Sonequa. I'm Julian from Strange New Pod. It's very nice to meet you.
Really nice to meet you, too.
I want to talk to you about the first episode. So good. Captain Burnham seems very grounded, finally. Like, the chair is really hers.
Thank you.
No other real outside obstacles until Captain Rainer comes around, and you guys are butting heads. Callum Keith Renee, a sci-fi, you know, legend, has been in everything. How was filming that episode and getting to butt heads with another captain, something you haven't really gotten to do as a captain yet?
Oh man, I loved it. We love Callum. He's so brilliant. You know, we've had some blessed casting in this show. We've got these brilliant actors who come in and pour out their hearts and their souls. Eve Harlow and Elias Tufekcis came in as Maul and Locke here in this last final season as well. Shayla last season. I tell you, there's just been so many been so many amazing people. And Callum, you know, he came in, he was family immediately, and I love being able to tell this story of Burnham becoming a mentor, of Burnham becoming a guide, and of Burnham being able to give someone else the same second chance that she got. I saw myself in him as Burnham. And so I love how we sort of flipped the leadership, the traditional leadership dynamics in that way. And I love that you can see the difference between patriarchal leadership and matriarchal leadership with Burnham. And it was a joy and an honor to be able to tell that story.
We also see the return of Book and David Zala.
Yes.
I have to say, like, the way that you guys left things at the end of season 4 and that big moment when he comes back, and it's just so beautiful. And now all of a sudden, there's been that lack of any kind of communication. Were you expecting that coming into season 5? Was that a choice that you guys very actively decided to make?
Well, you know, we didn't know what exactly was going to happen. We knew that things weren't going to just pick up as usual, because if that were the case, then you're not remembering what happened yesterday. And that's a big part of our show, of our iteration, is that we really remember what happened yesterday and we're permanently changed by it. We're permanently changed by each other. And so Burnham and Book have most definitely changed each other. They are classic iron sharpening iron. And I appreciate that you pick up with them in this really complicated space. Because there's all kinds of places you can go from there. But I think that what they went through in season 4 was just too big to be ignored. They had to both stand their ground, and their grounds were against each other. and all they knew was their synergy and their symmetry. And so they realized, oh man, I care more about what I stand for than our I'm willing to sacrifice our relationship for what I stand for. And they were both right in that way. So now they have to reestablish, well, what are we then? Do we trust each other? Or is it broken? Is it broken for good? I don't know.
We hope not.
Right.
All right, guys. And that was my interview from last night from they called it the red carpet premiere, but I liked to call it the black alert premiere carpet because it was a black carpet. They did a gold carpet for Strange New Worlds. This was a black one. So black alert. Love it. I hope that you guys enjoyed that. We're not done hearing from Sonequa. We are going to hear from her a little bit more next week as well, along with Wilson Cruz. It was just an absolute pleasure to get to talk to her. I want to quickly, very quickly, because we still have a lot to get to, kind of get your guys' thoughts, and it could be random, no order, about some of the things that she said.
Such good answers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, no diss to like other actors when they answer questions, but like a lot of the time you're like, where are you in the show? You know, like, or they answer, you know, what everybody wants to hear. But like she has like such detailed, precise, like, you know, thorough answer, like that answer about matriarchal mentoring is so true, and that's so good. And that I remember when we were doing the panel, like the Discovery panel at WonderCon, they were saying that it takes an incredible actor to play every like moment of Michael Burnham. From, you know, the first officer, the mutineer, the prisoner, the one who doesn't trust anybody, the one who gets betrayed, the one who finds a family again, and all this, like all her grieving, all her like everything she goes through. And that's true that she's yet again playing another Michael Burnham in this season. And yeah, that's absolutely incredible. I love her. I love her so much. So much. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think Giraffe summed it up.
Yeah, I think she did. So. I think we could move on. Speaking of moving on, going to Navarre, gonna get married. Yes, let's talk about Saru and Tarina, or do you need a little mind meld? Eric,
go off. I love their relationship so much, and I'm glad that there's a relationship that's, you know, blooming on this show. The fact that Saru called her part of his family, just like, it melted me. I was like, I love you so much. I want to be at this wedding. I want to just see it. I want a wedding episode of them just like getting ready for their wedding and having it amazing. I love them. I love this relationship, and I want more of it.
Nice. Hawk?
We haven't had a wedding episode in a long, long time, have we?
DS9, not since
DS9.
No, Enterprise. No.
Oh, Voyager.
No, Enterprise.
Enterprise?
At T'Pol's wedding.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
In the game, that was 2004.
So. No, wait. No. Will and Deanna.
That's after. That's before. Yeah.
2002?
That's not an episode, though. That's just
like, okay, yeah. Fuck. Okay.
Cole's wedding.
Try already, not to let it be Enterprise.
I love this. I love their relationships. I love that little thing about the mind melt and that. It's like, when do you hear Vulcan make a joke, or do you need a little mind melt in that? Like, however, I'm hoping this isn't like that, you know, 6 weeks to retirement, or, you know, 6 days from retirement kind of setup.
No, Hawk, no.
I know. I'm sorry.
Why would you say such a thing?
Shake him, stop.
No, I'm gonna think about that all the time.
Sorry, I know I should have said it, but
I don't have anything for you.
Well, I have something. Go to hell, Hawk.
Yeah, oh, here you go, Hawk. Oh my god, it's a full barrage. You're fucked, man.
And it after just keeps like, going. We have like two episodes to do.
I don't know how long the buttons go for.
I've said my piece.
And he's dead. He can't talk anymore.
You ruined us.
Listen, I love this for them. Am I totally invested in that? Not really. Now that it's there's, I don't have the will they, won't they. I'm just like, okay, that's cool. You know, I'm happy for them. I have, as you know, a fan fiction reader, I have so many technical questions about this whole thing that Discovery will never answer. So thank you, AO3. And I hope only
bitch.
Vulcan like a motherfucker. Exactly. I just hope that we're not going to spend a whole episode on this, because we have only 10 episodes and these are the 10 final episodes. And I love Saru and Tarina. I'm here for this. I want to see more of Nivar. I'd be like into like cultural stuff in like Nivar, how like are like the, because we've seen Vulcan weddings, right? So the question is like, we've never seen a Romulan wedding. What's going on Nivar? Like, I have many like anthropology questions, but on the other hand, we have only 10 episodes. So I hope it's not like too central. And I'm sorry, I'm going to get hate mail, but yeah, I'd rather get like action. And
I don't disagree with you. I mean, I'm fine having a wedding in the episode, but it can't be a full episode.
It's on the progenitor homeworld.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Shut up. What are they doing? Like them two there, like, can we airlock them?
Oh boy. MC.
I was waiting for this so much. Since the moment Saru and Tarina talked to each other, like I think in Unification 3, I've shipped it. Like I shipped it so hardcore, and I'm so glad that I was not imagining things. I think they have a great dynamic. I think with Tarina, we get to see this very sweet side of Vulcans that we don't usually get to see. With the whole like teasing of the mind meld thing. I really appreciate that, showing variation in characters or in species. Because, I mean, yes, she's a very serious character, but she doesn't always have to be serious, especially when she's, you know, with her special person, you know, that's where she gets to let all of those walls down. Like Giraffe, I do have questions. I am more than willing to look up the answers myself on the internet. and I'm so happy. I want to see a wedding. I want to see a Vulcan Kelpian wedding together. I think it would be very cool. So yes, I was literally like this, clutching my chest when she proposed. So,
parentheses, we know from Strange New World that Vulcan women are the ones who propose.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
I like that continuation. Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
Yep. I'm never going to live down seeing Tarina crack the mind meld joke. It was like one of my favorite things ever. It was just the best. The way that these two profess their love for each other is just like, Saru is such an eloquent talker and Tarina is such an eloquent talker. And it's just like, damn, write me some love poetry. I would read your book of love poetry. Like, oh, it's just so good.
Nivarian sonnets.
Nivarian sonnets by Saru and Tarina. Yes, please give me that. I don't know what else to say. Yes, give us a wedding. Just don't take up a whole episode. But I love them. I love them. I love that, like, Discovery also hasn't finished docking and Saru's just like, blip, blip, and is on there and is like, we got to talk. I'm going to marry you. I love you. I'm becoming an ambassador. Loved it. We didn't really talk about that, but Saru is becoming or is maybe going to become an ambassador. So, he accepts it in the second episode.
That's not
a spoiler. Yeah. I have to be careful. Cool.
And that is why I do not watch the episodes.
I know. hey, Giraffe.
Yes.
Earmuffs. Earmuffs.
What?
Earmuffs.
Take off.
Cover up your ears.
Yep. So we're at that point of the show. I'm just gonna say it. Talk about the chase reveal. How do you feel about it, Eric?
I I did was not expecting it. I like that they've connected to another era of Star Trek. I totally forgot about the episode until they showed like the clips. I was like, wait a minute, I remember this.
What am I doing? I can't hear anything.
You can take them off now, but unless it's
no, you need to send me a text. I can? Yes? Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
We're talking about the Chase, the TNG episode.
I have to close my ears?
Because it was really fun watching you do that.
It was very fun.
I was so confused. I was like, okay, sorry, go ahead.
So them showing the progenitors again was fun. Like I was talking to these guys before the show. Me and Hawk have a friend that we used to play a video game with, and we would talk. She's an archaeologist. So we would talk about the whole ancient alien thing, the ancient astronaut theory, and she hated it. So we used to bug her about it all the time. And the fact that they're bringing it back into TNG was something that just made me giggle. I mean, Gene Roddenberry wanted all the aliens to look human-esque. So I guess they wanted to do something that would sort of explain that in the TNG era. I never thought they'd come back to it, but here we are. Yep.
Yep. Hawk.
I enjoyed the little nod. I was like, it was such a cool little surprise. I was like, they're going back there. I know it's a controversial episode and people have any opinions on it. A lot of people really like the episode. It's actually kind of listed high up on the ranking in TNG. We'll see what happens. But I was into it.
Giraffe.
Fucking hate that episode. How many fucking times do I have had to say that the Chase is like one of the most fucking problematic episode of Star Trek science wise? I understand they wanted to explain why all aliens were like dudes with like, you know, prosthetic screws to them, to their face. I get this, but there are like so many things that are problematic in the Chase. First of all, archaeology is a fucking science. Okay, it's not like a hobby. It's not a made up stuff. We study to do that. We have to learn geology. We have to learn anthropology. We have to learn history of art. We have to learn like a shit ton of things to be an archaeologist. And I always like I like Indiana Jones. I'm not gonna say I don't like Indiana. I like Indiana Jones. It's funny. It's why I became an archaeologist. You know, I like Stargate. But the thing is, like, it was cool in the 90s to be like, and the professor just like shows up with like a fucking item he stole from an excavation, like the British Museum. You know, you're like, okay, cool, we still do that in the future, fantastic. But the biggest problem for me for the Chase is the question of intelligent design, that it puts humans as special and different, and like, you know, we were created by people that are very smart, and we're different. And you know, it's a little bit like geocentrism, like putting, you know, Earth at the center of the solar system. I think it's dangerous notions. We're not special. We're cool because we're sentient and we have life, and maybe we're alone in the universe, and that's terrifying also. But we are not better than other species. We are one species, and we have not been designed. We just are. We are a product of our environment, and that's cool too. And I don't like the fact that in 2024, we're bringing fucking intelligent design back in science fiction. That is troubling to me. That is pissing me off. That is not cool to scientists who every day in the US and in the world are working hard to, you know, further human progress, when hearing people going around like, oh, everything was built by giants. No, it was not. No, it was not. Brown people can build stuff too. The Chase is on my shit list. And in the second episode, when Tilly goes, it's the people who created us, I died inside again. Like, no, we were not created. We were not fucking created. And you would expect that people in the future, it like scientists would not be, I mean, they're influenced because the chase happened. So I suppose they learned that at school and shit like that. But I hope Discovery is going to bust that open and be like, psych, it was all a lie.
And I do think that they're going to. I'm very convinced of this because Discovery has always been smarter about this shit. And I think that, and I know I'm always the one on the show that like gives the benefit of the doubt, but Discovery at least has like the track record of backing their shit up. So that's kind of my hope.
I don't know, because in Picard, like, they did not understand the concept of evolution either. And it's Beth Crusher, who's supposed to be a fucking doctor, who doesn't understand how evolution works. And I'm like, it's like 5 minutes. Like, ask your science advisor. They have an awesome science advisor. It's Dr. Erin MacDonald, who does also all the science for Prodigy. Like, come on.
But that's also why I think that this is a setup. I really do.
Fucking bee.
Yeah. Very quick. Welcome. We have a first-time viewer in the chat. Welcome, Chasen, to the chat. Welcome. We hope you stick around. We have fun. We have lots of fun.
So, yeah. I mean, I love throwback. On the other hand, I'm tired of everything being throwback to TNG. But you know what? If it gets view, I'll allow it. But, yeah. I texted you, Julian, my husband's reaction when they...
No, you didn't text me. You told me to FaceTime you. I watched it live.
And it was not pretty.
It wasn't.
No.
Nope. Sure wasn't. Yeah. MC.
I cannot be as eloquent about this as Giraffe. But you said that you're tired of everything being a TNG reference. Seriously, like that Devil Wears Prada like meme was going through my head. I was just like, a TNG reference? Groundbreaking. Like, we get a lot of TNG references in modern Trek. It's not really reaching to bring something from TNG into any of the new shows. I mean, hell, Discovery already had an episode that is a sequel to TNG episodes.
Yeah, but it's also the best episode of the show. Just saying.
I mean, I don't deny that. I love Unification 3, but I'm just saying it's like, it's not like they were really reaching, taking something from TNG. And also, I don't like the chase. Not for any deep reason. It's mostly, I just think it's a boring episode. I don't think it is a good episode for... Maybe it's just me, but it's actually an episode that I disliked so much that I couldn't remember what happened in it. And I had to go back and read a synopsis. And I was like, oh, yeah, that episode. I didn't like that one. And so I just kind of like blocked it out. And as for what Discovery is going to do with it, considering it has to do with the creation of the species, they either have to make it that the progenitors didn't actually do it, or they have to not explain it, because I don't think Discovery can have that, you know, definitive, yes, this is absolutely what happened. 'Cause that's too big. That's an answer that should not be should not be answered.
The show is called Discovery, though, right? And I know that's the name of the ship, but it's also the name of the show. And I think that it's a, for better or for worse, by your guys' arguments, for better or for worse, it is a discovery that happens in TNG. I wonder if in this show that is called Discovery, that discovery is completely just blown apart into something that is completely like, that's my hope. That's what I was talking about when Giraffe was talking. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a very smart writer's room. They've shown that to us time and time again. I think there's going to be a new discovery with this, and they're going to blow the whole intelligent design thing out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you are right on that.
I hope so too. I hope so much.
I feel like they have to do that, because if they're just playing it straight and it's like, we're trying to find these people, that is not interesting at all, then that's basically a MacGuffin. And I don't want that to just be an excuse for them to have this Indiana Jones adventure, which is what they've, you know, done. And we'll get into that in episode two, which, you know, I love an Indiana Jones adventure, but when it's leading to aliens that apparently created everything, then you're suddenly getting into Crystal Skull territory. And
oh, I was going to talk about that too.
Oh, no. The less we say about that, the better.
And I want to read Eric the Red's comment. I mean, it tracks because archaeology changes over time as old theories get blown apart with new evidence. And if this is not the series to do that, I don't know what is. So,
I believe,
and I really do. MC, were you done?
Yeah,
yeah. Like, I don't know how much more I can say about it because I watched The Chase after this. I hadn't watched it in a while, and I watched it after this. I have also had the benefit of sitting at Jurassic Panel, which I thought was really good, and things I never thought about. It's fucking fantastic, and I'm still really sad that we weren't able to record it.
Like, we can redo it and record it.
Yeah, like I don't have like as strong feelings about it, but like The Chase by no means is like, I do think it's kind of a forgettable episode of Trek. With Discovery, dare I say, I think it's a cool concept again if they break it open. I think it's a really cool way to go if you go in with the mindset that they are just going to, I mean, like if you go back and you watch like our trailer breakdown, by the way, Giraffe, can you say,
I'm a fucking prophet.
You're a prophet. Giraffe was right. The three magic words.
Giraffe was right.
And uh-oh. I just would like to just in case anybody's like, well, they get screeners. Like they were guessing and they knew. No, we did that episode before the screeners went out. She's just a fucking prophet.
Wait. I want to know what, because I haven't seen the trailer.
Oh, Giraffe totally guessed it was The Chase.
Oh shit.
Oh yeah. My god.
Yeah, yeah, she totally guessed it was The Chase. Yeah. I'm here for it. I'm here for it tentatively. Like, listen, if we get to the end of the season and we're at the finale, and you know how I feel about some Discovery finales, and they're like, oh yeah, we found the power and they did create us, and it's like, we gotta have a talk. But I don't think they're going that way. So I'm here for where we're going. Because
by the way, during the Discovery panel, Michelle Paradise said that when they filmed the season five, they didn't know they were getting canceled. That was the last one. Yeah. And when it was told, they got to like shoot a few scenes more that they needed. And she said that if she had known, she would have done the same thing. So,
yep. It's very interesting, too.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to do final thoughts, even though I have it on here, because I think we're good. We're going to go right into, there's not a ton to talk about with Under the Twin Moons, so I think we could still wrap up pretty quickly. We're going into episode 502, Under the Twin Moons. We are just going to go in the exact opposite order. It'll go MC, Giraffe, Hawk, Eric, followed by myself. Let's talk about, because they get the next hint, right? The Twin Moons. A lot of Star Wars references. So Michael and Saru, it's their last mission. Saru's going to go become a Federation ambassador. And Michael's all like, oh, Saru, don't get shot. Tarita would be heartbroken. It's kind of cute. Let's talk about quickly their last away mission together, MC.
So when Hawk, when we were talking about the last episode, brought up the whole 6 weeks to retirement thing, this episode completely destroys that they were going to be doing it, because they were just throwing lampshades all the fuck over the whole idea. Because you just have Michael there just being like, you're retiring, you're getting married, you know, like you might as well be going to the USS Live Forever. Like, I am protecting you.
USS Live Forever.
That's the same farm where we send dogs, basically.
Yeah, I could see the writers, like, the fingerprints all over it. And I appreciated it. And I love Michael and Saru, their relationship is one of my favorite friendships in all of Star Trek. They are just wonderful together. I really liked the look of this planet. I liked what was going on with it. The Indiana Jones puzzle. I loved that, and how Saru is like they made it so that Saru is the only person who could have like properly like Reddit after it all got messed up. And when they finally got the clue, and they're like, you know, two souls, and I'm like, it's Trill. It's fucking Trill. Just say it's Trill.
Nice.
Yeah.
We are at Giraffe.
I really like that second episode.
Yeah.
Because they tried so to be so good with the archaeology, and I respect that. But I love the, you know, I love going to a planet. Like, let's go and see, like, a weird planet with, like, weird fauna and, like, you know, if you throw, like, a couple of rains in it, I'm going to be super happy. And they try to kill you? Yeah, let's go. But a question. How did she know that this was that planet with the twin moons when they're, like, more than, like, how did she say, like, 600 planets?
It's because they were in sync. There were three moons on that planet, but two were in sync with each other in their orbit.
So it would appear to be two moons to anyone living
on the planet. But she noticed was this one and not the other two moons anywhere else.
Yeah, that are insane. Okay,
I was just like, I'm going to accept it. I don't understand it, but like, sure. So I was like, let's go see that planet. I really like the fact that, you know, it's a riddle. I'm a sucker for a riddle. And I love also all the throwback to Picard season one. Because the box, like the impossible box or whatever it's called, the Tajakan, is actually, it's a word that Narek like says in Picard season one, like that's the box where he keeps the poison, and he explained that it's the way to open it. And I thought it was really cool. And also when they talk in front of the obelisk or whatever the hell that thing is, that
it's like, an obelisk. Yeah. It's an obelisk. Yeah.
Yeah, all the throwback to what, what's his name, Michael Chabon, like, wrote about, you know, Romulan culture.
That was wonderful, by the way. Because you've never read that.
It's not in the show. It's in the addendum to the show.
It's an essay, yeah.
Written by the writer. So I really like that it becomes, like, actually canon, because I don't think it's in TNG. I don't think so. But that whole thing and her intimate knowledge of everything Romulan is really interesting, because where did she catch that? Like, where does that come from?
Like, okay. Can I give my headcanon on this? I think that they had to have like a 1 or 2 month like off the ship, like debrief. They went back to school for like 2 months and got caught up on like everything about what's happened over the past 900 years.
I was gonna have an other headcanon that what their face, Vulcans absolutely lie about not knowing anything about Romulans.
I like that too.
They totally fucking keep tab on these motherfuckers all the time, and it's part of their education to know stuff about the Romulans, but to shut up because they look like them. That. And so she learned all that on school, being, you know, educated on Vulcan, never talked about it because she was not supposed to. And then now it's the future and Nivar exists. She's like, yeah, I know all this.
I like that. I actually like that better.
I like that.
Yeah.
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 This is fact now.
This is fact. I love seeing Romulan writing. Like, we didn't get it a lot since Picard. Picard did a lot for the Romulan canon. So I love seeing like the written in the book, the written on this is so cool. I didn't know where I was. Oh, and I like also the fact that they send the dots to like clean up the obelisk and like restore the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but half the shit got blown up because they were there also. I remind you, like they blew up a whole statue. Then they faced one.
They didn't blow up the statue. They used an EMP on it, which didn't actually blow it up.
No, but just, all like, the little robots blew all the shit up trying to kill them.
Yeah.
And that's then, not their fault. Know,
true.
When they're like getting like transported, I love the fact that it phasered that thing too. That thing got blown up again. But I see that I liked. I like the, I see the bacteria. Yeah. I'm like, I'm sure the science is not sound, but I'm here for it. I'm here for it. Yeah.
draft.
Oh, I loved Rainer in this. We talk about him.
We're going to go to him the next right. the next bullet point. Right. I feel like this is a question just for you. Chasen in the chat goes, after the burn, can societies reset and relearn? I feel like it's a very you question mean? To answer.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Yeah, like,
I mean, after every cataclysm, you know, you don't reset.
You rebuild. You just,
like, for example, yeah. like, we like it's always the thing, like people always speak about fuck, this thing is going to be long, but we always speak about the fall of the fall of the Roman Empire. The people living at that time were not like, oh, the Roman Empire is falling. Like, it was just, you know, politics and change of society and, you know, and progress and new generation doing other things. That was never like a sudden fall. Like, I always, like, laugh that we're most probably going through the fall of our civilization right now. Oh, 100%. And we're all cool with it. And because it's not an end, like, suddenly losing, like, we stop using coal, for example. Nobody was like, this is the end of coal. No, like, there's a more practical thing.
Well, Republicans
thing.
Are, but that's another story.
I think the burn definitely, like, pushed people, like, to adapt. And, you know, ingenuity comes from trying to overcome problems. So I'm sure a lot of things actually came out of the burn, like a lot of science came out of the burn. But yeah, I don't feel like the Nivarians like resetted. They just reset, like they just continued.
Yeah, no, I like it. Huck.
Oh, watch Free Body Problem about this, by the way.
Yeah.
If you yes.
That is the watch, theme I'm, of the thing.
Kovic is Wade. Kovic is Wade in this show.
He is, isn't he?
Yeah.
My God. Yeah, this was great. As far as like, you know, this season is really leaning heavy into TNG and that. And I think everybody kind of, you know, knows what I'm talking about. There was a real Arsenal of Freedom kind of moment in this episode. You know, drafts got me thinking now and that, like, you know, how does Michael know all that stuff about the Romulans? So I think she's right. Vulcans knew way more about Romulans, like pre-Balance of Terror, than they actually let on. Because she had some pretty intimate knowledge in that, you know. It's like they keep the front door very obvious in that, but the back door is a secret.
I'm going to put a parenthesis on my bullshit because she says, like, 24th century Romulan society, and there's no way she knows that.
No. But still,
so,
she could have had a talk with mommy. Someone could have mind melded with her. Like, there's ways.
Yeah, her mom's in the co-op.
They probably wanted to re-up their knowledge when they moved like centuries forward.
Yeah.
Too. Right?
Yeah, that's what I was saying Michael's earlier. Like, they had to have taken a couple of months off and like went back to school.
Also, she knows her brother is responsible for the unification. Yes. I'm pretty sure she read everything about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really, I mean, like, as far as bedtime reading, this is, you know, the stuff Michael's probably pouring over at night before she sleeps.
But she's a xenoanthropologist, so that's her job also, like.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, Arsenal Freedom's great. I love that the reason she only did a minimal complement of crew was because she knew this was a burial site, that it was sacred to some sort of civilization and that, and that she wanted to be very respectful of it and that. And I love that they kind of, you know, in being respectful, she kind of learned that these aliens were also extremely respectful to the dead and that, so much so that they set up these guardians and that to stop grave robbers from like, you know, just, you know, despoiling everything there. You know, another fine action piece, great moments between Michael and Saru and that. I still
action
love
Saru.
Action Saru.
Action Saru.
It's been ages since I've seen three, so I totally forgot about, like...
Kang earlier wrote, my season was made seeing Saru's quills again.
Yeah.
And him running in a better way than he did in season one.
Oh, let's not talk about that bad CGI.
Yeah, they got wiser on the filming on that one, so that was great. Overall, it was really good. I love the game. You know, we're on a chase, we're on a relic hunt, and, you know, the fact that Molenbeek got there and then decided to blast away the inscription so nobody else could see it. Like, these two are hardcore.
They are. Yeah. Eric.
I love it. I'm going to keep this short as well. I love the Indiana Jones-esque feel of this planet. I love that it takes place on Takodana. Never thought we'd go to that planet. I thought the booby traps were great. I I'm a sucker for Indiana Jones movies, and the fact that Crystal Skull didn't have like booby traps in it, that like they doing it here was wonderful. We'll talk about Raynor next. The rapport between Saru and Michael Burnham is just so wonderful, and it's something that doesn't happen as often as I would like. And just seeing them talk alone at the beginning was so wonderful. It was knowing that Saru is going to go and do his own mission this season, probably, because he's an ambassador, makes me sad that we won't get this as much.
Yeah.
I like Tarina, but I love how I love how Michael and Saru interact, and they play off each other so well. And especially in the first season, how much they were up against each other to this point in the relationship. It's wonderful seeing them get to this point of trust and mutual respect. I made my Star Wars thing. We'll get more Star Wars later. Yeah.
I'm not going
to
talk.
Love the reference to Promethean was good. I like that.
Giraffe knows that I'm a fellow lover of everything Romulan, so I'm not going to disrespect everything she just said because she said it beautifully. I'm going to go to the very end of the episode and talk about Saru and Michael instead, because I love the moment when they're saying goodbye and Saru is speaking, I went through Vaharai in this very room, and how beautifully shot that is, because right in the background and you see his bed where that scene took place, and it was so intentional and so beautiful. Their closing moments to everything they just went through on the planet. Saru and Michael are probably, I haven't really thought about this until today, probably the best and most fleshed out relationship in all of Star Trek. I really believe that. You could say Kirk and Spock. You could say Boimler and Mariner. You can say, oh, there's so many. But like, this has been them, and them for now 4.2 seasons. You know, like, there's my weird math. It's beautiful. It really is. Let's talk about Raynor, the inquiry scene, which I thought was really well acted by everyone. Then him kind of not having anything to do, so he monitors comms like Badgy and assists Tilly and Adira. What did we think about this, MC?
First thing, I have a question. The inquiry counselor, whatever, that alien, do we know what species that alien is?
No, but it was at the beginning, and it was also in season 4.
Season 4.
Okay. Yeah. Because, like, it immediately drew my eye, and I'm like, you are interesting looking, and I really, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, that's a lot of special effects, so that they probably not going to focus, but yeah, drew my attention. I mean, like, the inquiry, I guess it makes sense, except for the fact that Kovich doesn't seem like he would really, like, care about
Kovich
went down,
but Rilik a heart like 100%.
Well, yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like it did go above Kovich at this point. I love seeing Vance and the president again because I really like them. I think like the thing with Raynor that I really like is most to do with the end. I like that Raynor is going to be the first officer. This is the appropriate part to talk about this.
Yeah, you can 100% talk about this here. Yeah.
Because you needed that inquiry to get to that moment. And we did have kind of the red herring set up of, oh, is it going to be Book? Because Saru like suggested it. And I was immediately like, oh God, please no.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would not have worked. But Raynor and Michael, I think, is going to be an interesting dynamic. And I think that Michael recognizes that he's a valuable asset to her because of how different he is than her. And I think, like, everything that was said in the inquiry really kind of set that up. As for him monitoring the comms...
I'm always monitoring comms.
He's that guy with the police scanner on his phone, you know?
It has to be that. I mean, they just had him through an inquiry and basically forced him into retirement, and he's still able to just monitor comms just wherever the fuck he wants.
I know people like that. Like, believe me, I live in San Diego.
That dude totally has.
Here are doing things you don't want to know.
I guarantee you that Rainer has courier tech in his quarters.
Oh. Yeah. But yeah. No. I'm really interested to see where it goes from here. As for Tilly and Adira, they were there. I like see them. But I didn't feel like they really contributed that much.
Yeah, fair.
Giraffe.
Yeah, way more fleshed out character here in the second episode. I really liked him. He got a little bit more, you know, depth. Like, he's a guy who's, yeah, he's angry, but he's like not crazy. He's not also absolutely a lunatic, you know, that thinks he's always right. Like, he's like, no, like, say the truth. Like, you were not happy with what I did. Like, just say it, but also helping, also, you know, tech savvy. He knows his shit, you know. He's not only relying on other people's aptitude. No, I liked him. I think he's gonna be a great character to bounce off for Michael, and I can't wait to see what he's gonna do. We didn't talk about Tilly at all. I'm just here for drunk Tilly trying to hook up with everybody. I'm here for this.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Tilly at all, but yeah, I'm here for coffee Tilly too.
Yeah, Tilly trying, like, get that ass, girl.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
Let's go. I'm here for this. This is another ship that I'm like, I'm going to support this.
Yeah.
Get it.
Like it.
Yeah.
Yep. Hawk.
Yeah, I love this. Yeah, like I said, everybody's been saying this is where you fleshed out the character of Rainer, you know, partially in that court-martial scene. I loved it, and I got some kind of strange BSG vibes when I was watching it. I don't know. Maybe it was the close-in on the way they do on the character's face.
And BSG, right? Had a lot of seeds like that.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's little things. Like, the fact that, you know, Michael wasn't really wanting to testify against him at this tribunal and that, and he turns to her and says, you didn't have any problems voicing your opinions back on the ground and that, so, you know, go for it, you know? I kind of appreciated that about him. Monitoring the comms, yeah, he's on there. Because really, he's got nothing else to do at that point, and it's like before, until they officially give him his walking papers and that, he stays on mission, right? And as he said, I've been through... How many red directives?
He's seven. Four is the lead.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't want them to fuck up. I think that's why he's monitoring the comm. He's worried for what is going to go down.
Yeah. Exactly. He, no matter what, even if he think, you know, like he, you know, obviously voiced his opinions, you know, like not necessarily that I'm being screwed over and that, but like, you know, it's like, this is who I am. It's like, I'm not just some old warmonger and that, and that he said, like, the Breen are, you know, are infighting and that right now, so they could potentially be a threat down the line. You know, there was a place and a time for guys like him and that, you know, especially during the burn and that, which must have been a rough, desperate time in that, as far as, like, you know, the violence that, you know, the Federation would have seen in that. Even Admiral Vance said, like, he and I have been in more firefights than you can imagine.
And Eric the Red actually wrote in the chat that, does anyone else feel like Rainer was once Vance's number one, which is why they're friends, which is, I'd like to see that relationship expanded upon.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, but things are changing in the Federation and that, and Rilik is, you know, she is obviously at the forefront of that, and, you know, I felt for the character, especially at the end, because I think, you know, he just, you know, after the court martial, it was that little shit he gives out, and he's like, yeah, I kind of fucked myself over in there. Yeah. He's like, I know it. Yep. You know, I'm not blaming anybody else except myself.
Yeah. And Vance says as much, and I'm going to read G. Everett Claiborne's comment here. Rainer's a patriot. He loves Starfleet, right? And that's exactly what Vance says. But you have a president who's trying to clean house of people like him, you know.
Well, he also fucked up
He did. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did fuck up. You have to.
And
yeah.
He owns it. He does. Which is great. Yeah. You know, he's not like, no, I should be a captain, not an XO. You know, he doesn't have like a weird ego or like a weird pride about things, which, you know, is great to see for a character.
Well, he's Michael, right? Like, he's Michael. He's his love is the Federation. His first duty is to the Federation, and that's very much Michael too.
Also, like when he was helping Tilly and Adira and that, he said it's not a science problem, it's a people problem, you know, that you're trying to solve, and that would totally be a Michael attitude.
Yeah,
and a good leader, he like managed to like, you know, like help them to get to the solution without knowing the solution himself. Like that was great leadership.
Eric,
I know Hawk said that he thought of BSG for the court scene, but I thought it was more like The Expanse because he was like giving off Avasarala vibes there. And he was like,
love that.
At the moment, I knew what I had to do. It may have been the wrong thing, but I did it because I thought it was right. And, you know, he knows he fucked up. He says shit afterwards. I love that sequence. The Callum Keith Rennie he's a gem. Like he's phenomenal as an actor. And, you know, me and MC have been watching him since the early 90s, apparently. That whole sequence was very interesting because you see the types of captains both Michael Burnham and Rayner are. And I feel like if given the chance, Michael would have defended him the whole time, right? You see that in that moment. And Callum Keith Rennie would have just gone, I'm saying his full name as the character.
It's like, really hard not to say his full name, though. Like, saying Callum just feels weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he would have been just straight. Like, he would have said his piece, like he did. And I loved him for that. What was the next thing we were talking about? I don't want to go too long. The Tilly and Adir stuff was, you know, it was there. It even at the end when Adira was talking about how she's not looking forward to, or sort of looking forward to, seeing Gray next week, it's worrisome.
They also said that they were enjoying the alone, right?
Yeah,
she was enjoying the alone. Yeah. I didn't think Gray was enjoying the alone. Was it? I thought she enjoyed
Adira,
her.
Adira was saying,
by the way, they for Adira.
They. That they were kind of, you know, enjoying being alone in that.
Yeah.
You know, still love Gray, but like having that time to, you know, to yourself and flesh yourself out as a person and pursue your own interests.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Seeing them work with Tilly again was cool too. They were a fun like duo. What was it, 2 seasons ago? Because Tilly wasn't really in last season, right?
Yeah, but in season 3, a little bit.
Yeah. So that was fun. Rainer's totally the...
No, it was last season because they do the shuttle mission together. Yeah.
Such a long time ago.
It was. It really was.
The Rainer listening in on the comms, you know that he had to make sure this mission was going like the way he wanted. He could tell that he was like, this crew, this is their first red directive. I've been on 7. They might not know their shit. So I like that he came in without any ego and was just like, you know what? I'm here to help. Let's do this. We're going to do this. And that's what I think you really get out of the last scene when Michael and Rayner talk, is that he doesn't mind. He's a captain, right? But he doesn't mind being an XO because he just wants to, he wants this to work out. He wants to do the mission, like everyone else has said. Like, he doesn't seem like someone whose ego is right out there. He might have one, but that's not what's important at this point.
Yeah.
Did I finish this? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I'm going to just talk about the end again, right? Because it's so much just like an easy decision for Michael to make him her XO because she sees so much of him, you know, in her. And that's that whole thing about having a second chance, what we heard Sonequa talk about earlier. Like, I really love this dynamic, and I can't wait to see where else it goes because we already know that Sonequa was an amazing actor. If you've never watched Battlestar, the show that you guys were talking about from the 90s, what's it called?
It's called Due South.
But even those two shows, he's a sci-fi veteran. He's been in everything. These are two amazing actors who I think are just going to like feed off of each other like so much, and I love their scene, and I love just the, like, you know, it's back to work. He zips up his jacket and it's back to the mission, and I loved everything about it. Eric, was that you getting something out of your mouth, or did you want to say something?
I have nail polish on my hand, and I totally bit it and ate by accident.
Book is helping Hugh and Stamets in this episode try and kind of get into the heads of Maul and La'ak, and we get a big revelation at the end that Book knows Maul and is maybe somehow connected to his mentor, Cleveland Booker IV. We're maybe going to finally get that story. That Book has said it's a story for another time. I think we're going to finally get that this season. How do you guys feel kind of about that scene where he one talks to them and then kind of figures out Maul and that revelation, MC?
I mean, I want to get this story from Book finally. I don't love the taking the female character who's being introduced and tying her to one of our main male characters through another male character. This revelation, it's nothing about her. It is about these other characters. And I don't love that being her identity. I need to see, and I think even though her relationship with La'ak is, that's very much defining her, she's still very much an active participant in that. And I don't feel like this revelation, I don't feel like that's an active thing for her. And I don't, so I was not like the biggest fan of this revelation, because it feels like it's taking something away from this character and making it more about Book.
Okay. Giraffe?
I will agree on this. I would have wanted to have this character a little bit like more stand by there on their own and be a little bit more mysterious, and maybe that revelation could have come later. I felt like the second episode, I mean, on the other hand, we have only 10 episodes, so you know.
Yeah.
But also I feel that it's going to go down that they are going to be at like her throat, ready to kill her, and Book is gonna intervene to not have her dead. And I'm just like, I want to know about this character via them. Like, I'm super interested in La'ak. Like, what's his deal? What's their deal? Like, you know, now I feel, yeah, it's going to hit a little bit too close to Book, and Book is going to, and I hope it's not true, but I feel he's going to be again in the same position than in season 4, where he's going to be like the guy that has to make a choice between the villain and Starfleet. You know what I mean? Because technically she is his only family that he has left, because he lost his planet. So I'm not super into Book being yet again in the middle like this, like the, you know, what choice he's going to make. But yeah, let's see. I mean, I want to know more about these guys anyway. And it's a good way also to know more about the courier, because I loved Wonderland, the book where you follow Michael as a courier. Right. And I would love to see more, like, and know more about them.
And that's why I like this. I'll get to that in a bit. By the way, before we continue, so many people, including Gimbombe, no disrespect to Rainer, but why is Joanna Oshikuna always overlooked for number one? She's the natural choice. A lot of that in the chat right now. Hard to overlook a little
Say
bit.
It.
Yeah.
Speak louder.
Yeah. Yes. Owo or Detmer, honestly, but like any of them, like, yeah. Yeah. Who's up, Hawk?
I think it's me. Yeah. I don't know that I dislike the revelation in that. I get how it could take away from Maul as a character in that, you know, the tie-in book, but also it is a good avenue into Book in the past. And like, well, will we ever finally get the answer to, like, you know, the name Cleveland Booker? Also, there was one thing the other thing I wanted to say in that regarding Book, that moment when he was examining the video and that of them, like, you know, launching all the probes in different directions and that, and the wild little thing and that, and him, like, you know, those two are in love. The break, yeah, it's, it kind of goes back to the breakup between him and Michael on that previous before, but he's like, those two are in love, they're free and that, and it's just being very wistful and reminding him of, you know, the days of him and Burnham and that alone without, when the, until the Federation came calling back. I'm interested to see where it goes, as a, you know, as a, as a pathway into books past, you know. I don't think it's going to, you know, define Maul as a character that we've been introduced to in that, in further on down and thing. It's just, it's an interesting tie, you know, and especially for a book who is, you know, desperately looking for family at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I would just like to, you know, follow up on that. I mean, like, if they wanted to bring in something about Cleveland Booker the Fourth, they could have had a connection to Locke. Like, it could have been like a former associate. They very much chose to make it his daughter and somebody that Book hasn't seen since she was a little girl. So it's very much
did
also...
Did they specifically say daughter?
Yes.
Yeah. They did say that it was okay. The daughter of the Fourth Cleveland okay. Booker.
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah.
It,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's creating, like, the family tie. Having her... I haven't seen her since she was a little girl. There is some infantilizing going on with that. So, I see that look on your face. Believe me, I recognize this kind of stuff when it goes on. If they wanted to bring in, like, the connection and have the story come out finally, it could have come out in a lot of different ways, but they chose to do it this way, and it bothers me.
It's going to be like, she's mean because she has childhood trauma. I was like, no, give me a woman that just mean because, like, fuck society.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I really don't think it's going to be much of anything. Like, I really don't.
Let's see.
I mean, yeah, let's see. But I don't see it. Hawk, were you done?
I'm all done.
Eric.
Yeah. Like, connecting Maul to Book is... The issue I have with this is it makes the universe smaller, right?
Yeah.
Everything is connected to these people all the time, it seems like. That being said, I do want to know more about Book or the space version of the pirate Dread Roberts. Like, they just... It's true.
The name just moves on. Sorry, I never thought of that, but yeah, you're right.
Or the Dread Pirate Roberts. But yeah, it could have been... It could have been Locke being his number one or something like that. They could have been running together as kids. Like, they could have had this Oliver-esque, like, flashback where I'm going to say Dread Pirate Roberts, but Book the Fourth has, like, mini Book and, like, Maul or Locke, like, running schemes. Like, that would have been cool. But, mm-hmm. you know, having
but
it
don't
family.
You think it's going to be a repeat of, like, Burnham and Spock? Like, you sort know, of, yeah. like the siblings that, like, got mad at what each other. And
no, because
now
the age difference, like, is so much. It feels like it's a lot. Like, I think he's quite.
How old is he?
What?
Like 40 something?
Probably 40 something. She's got to be like
20.
Late 20s, maybe early 30s. Like,
I mean, Spock and Burnham have, like, what, 10 years difference?
The other thing with that, too, is, like, it's not like Book's father was Cleveland Booker, right? Like, It's a pseudonym, and it's also it's Eric, you're talking about making the world smaller. We learn how small that world is in season three, like with the Courier Network and Giraffe, to be fair, in Wonderlands as well. Like,
yeah,
they all do know each other. I think it actually makes a shit ton of sense. I don't think it's as much of a family as it is just I don't know if dynasty is the right word either, but. Yeah, I don't know.
Like a legacy type
thing. Yeah, legacy. Yeah. Were you good? Keep going.
I guess, like, it does feel like they're setting this up to be, like, Book's gonna save her. And I don't feel like she's a character that needs to be saved. She seems like she's just out for fun, which I like her as a character for her. Like, there's nothing that feels like it's, like, malfeasance for this character. Like, nothing seems like they're doing it out of anger or like thing. They're looking
for a payday. They're looking for a big payday. She is, anyways.
And Book already said that. like they're doing it for fun. They're doing it for love. There's no like ulterior motive. They're not looking to get the ultimate power in the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I hope they don't tie it back to something familiar now. Yeah. Now that she knows that he's Book. Yeah. Right. Like, I don't want that.
I mean, listen, like the red herring has already like kind of been there. Right. Like, I think that the Bonnie, like they are Bonnie and Clyde. I think these two are doomed. I think they're dead. Like they've been dead since episode one. Like they're going to, no, they are. They're going to die. They're both going to die at the end of the show. Like that, I think that's almost given. I have no problem with them doing this connection. I don't think that it's going to be as big of a thing for as Book as we think it is.
But then like, then you mean that Book is going to yet again lose like,
I really don't think that she's much of anything to him. I think it's a revelation at the end, but I don't think it's like a substantial relationship. Like, I don't think that they were close.
I think it is because when he looks at the picture of her when she's a kid,
the look on his face,
he asked like for precise age and that's 7. And like, he's like, you know, I think there's something. I mean, most probably it's Chekhov's gun. They don't like introduce that relationship to not do anything with it. He's going to be responsible for something.
Like he gave it down to the months, right?
He did.
Yeah.
My other thing with this. Okay. So Book said she was, I guess I missed this line. It said Taris is the closest thing he had to family. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. But again, going back to what I said, like we read about this in Wonderlands. We know about this from Book already. Like these couriers, they know each other. They have a code. They all sit at a giant table together and like talk about their roots, like the ones that are close, like, you know, like it's not just, I can't believe I'm about to make this reference and I hope I don't do it ever again, but it's kind of like Fast and Furious.
The both family.
MC's leaving.
And we are done. Goodbye.
Hawk's leaving. MC's leaving.
I'm here for the family.
Right. I'm here for the family. Right.
That almost made me leave. I'm sorry.
It's not, you know, it's not a real family, but like it's kind of just like the ride or die, you know, organized crime family. I don't know. I don't think it's a big deal. We'll see where it goes. Again, I think it's the same thing with the chase. I think two of these things aren't as big as maybe we're thinking that they are. I also don't have a problem with it because it's the final season. If this wasn't the final season, I think I'd have maybe a problem with it, but like, I hope we learn a lot more about Book and Cleveland Booker before the season's over, because damn, I don't want to learn about it in a book. Fast and Furious, baby. Let's go. Any final thoughts on these two before we go and do some poll and mailbag? Go ahead, Eric.
I really like these. I'm glad they released these as a two-parter because they really flow into each other, and not spoiling next week, but it makes a logical place where it goes. That makes sense, right, Julian? You've seen the four, right?
Yeah.
That being said, the map that they showed when they were piecing everything together, why did it have to look like the map in Rise of Skywalker?
The
map from no, not that. I meant the space map when they're trying to find Luke Skywalker at the end of
Force Awakens.
Force Awakens. It looks exactly the same, and I was just like, every single space map has to look like that. I don't know.
Lizard King salutes and goes, wouldn't it be nice if villains didn't die for once? Like, again, like, I don't think they're villains though. They're Han Solo.
Yeah. Yum Yum Pod, when they did like their great show, on the villains of Discovery. Okay, season one, it's Loga, he dies. Season two, it's Control, blows up. Season three, what the fuck is it? The
Osira, who?
Osira.
Oh, yeah.
She dies. Season four, Tarka.
Tarka wasn't a bad guy. Not a villain.
He's the villain of the story.
He
was the villain of the story.
Who knows? His transporter might have worked. Who knows?
He went
home. Sure. I think if they off them again, I'm just like, come on. Like, let somebody leave for a minute.
Tarka moved to the Calvinverse.
Yep. Sure did.
You shut your mouth. That.
Yep. Anybody else? We got to move things along. Good. Happy. Subspace to pull and mailbag time. Let's do this thing.
Lieutenant Christopher, open a channel.
Channel's open.
Who wants to take the T'Pol tonight? Who hasn't done it in a while? I saw Eric. Actually,
yeah.
Eric. Yeah, you haven't been here in a while, like, I guess.
You haven't been here for a while. So
we asked Trek Twitter what they thought about the 2-episode Discovery season 5 premiere, and this is what they had to say. 62.5% said, "Oh my Kovich." 25% said, "Can I ride a warp bubble?" Oh man, yeah. 7.5 said, "Red directive," and 5% said, "Under the twin boos."
Yeah. Love that one.
Thanks. Eric, if we go back, wow, what was the order to start?
I was the last.
So it'd be Hawk. Yeah. Thank you. Hawk, could you take Matt Harker's mailbag, please?
Absolutely. Matt Harker wrote, "Got up at 5 a.m. for this doubleheader, and I'm definitely here for the shift in tone of this new season. I can't help but wonder if they tried this shift during season 3, if we'd still be facing the end of the run. Definitely love the mystery story and Tilly practically screaming that she's headed to the Academy series. Hopefully she tosses Lieutenant McScruff into her bag before she moves on."
Wonderful.
"I hope we get to see their chemistry develop. I definitely arched an eyebrow for Tarina's mind meld moment and appreciated the nod to Picard's season 3 with the portal weapon. I get the sense this season will be a race to the finish line in more ways than one. As much as I'd like to think we'll get to see how things turn out for each of our Discovery crew, I think that will be one loose thread we may be left with. 2 down, 8 to go. Let's fly."
Nice. Love it. Draft, can you take Eric the Red's, please?
Eric the Red wrote, "I enjoyed the Wall Mystery scavenger hunt, despite the chase not being one of my favorite TNG episodes. However, I did like how the ending of that episode finally gets a payoff here with the Romulans. Instead of an 'Oh my God, the galaxy is about to explode!' plot. Glad to see Book and Tilly return, and Rayner is an interesting addition. The whole needing to rediscover, find a new path has echoes of Beyond."
Ooh.
"Which is a good thing. This finally feels like the last dance of the Disco crew, with an ending change already echoed in dialogue with the premiere. Definitely looking forward to the rest of the scavenger hunt throughout the season." There was a lot of difficult word in this one. Come on.
Hey, you did good, though. You did good.
Echoed.
You did fine. You're great. MC, can you take Yum Yum Pods, please?
Yum Yum Pod wrote, "Discovery is back, and now they are following up on one of the dumbest plots of TNG, the Progenitors."
Can we just say, love you, Yum Yum Pod, for never holding back?
I screamed at the screen when they revealed that that's the thing we're going to do this season. I am glad that Saru's relationship is still progressing, and I liked his inner conflict about staying on Discovery or moving on. Even in the high sci-fi environment, it's still a relatable story. The new season seems a lot more quippy, and I wonder if that's because of the success of Strange New Worlds. But I found it to be sloppy at points in the execution. Mainly, it does the thing I find many American comedies to be guilty of, which is have these awkward pauses after a joke so that the audience can laugh. These episodes didn't do much for me in terms of a big story stuff and the set pieces, but I'd love to see more of David Cronenberg delivering his lines with complete apathy."
Love it.
David Cronenberg.
Yeah. I will take Troubles, who wrote, "These episodes were really interesting to watch because of this treasure hunt plotline mixed with a lot of action. It reminds me of Picard season 3 with the cast coming back together for one last big mission. I'm also excited to see how relationships, both friendships and love interests, develop and grow as the show progresses." Very nice. Eric, can you take Chris's, please?
Chris wrote, "The premiere was so much fun. 3 ships in fucking warp? How cool was that? Fights with Mortal Kombat guys who are protecting Freddy? Epic. Then 2 ships in Atmo doing the coolest thing Federation ships have ever done? Get the fuck out."
501 like hooked Chris.
501 hooked me for the funnies. 502 has me locked in for the rest. Hold on to your butts, everyone. This is going to be a wild season and I'm here for it. Let's fly."
Yeah.
Isn't it his birthday next week,
Chris? Is it?
I think it is. Yeah. So because we celebrated in Chicago.
Oh yeah. And we're gonna have happy hour next week too. Maybe we're gonna have a little birthday celebration. Hawk, Yeah. Hawk, take us home with Tara's limericks, please.
Ooh, I haven't done limericks in a while. All right. Tara wrote, limericks for Disco's new season premieres. 501, Red Directive. No time to celebrate. Disco's got a new objective. Coming along, Captain Rayner and his charming invective. Take this key, it leads to the Infinity Room. Stamets should be happy because we'll still be running on shrooms. Black alert. It's a red directive. All right, 502, Under the Twin Moons. On a search for their creators and the meaning of it all, following the Tan Jekron's clue while going after Locke and Maul, Saru's got one last mission. Then he'll stay with Tarina and take that ambassador position. Next clue leads to Trill. Now there's a curveball.
Nice. Love it. Ooh, I wonder if the curveball was a little throwback to Trill in DS9. Baseball? I don't know.
Baseball thing?
I'm looking way too much into that. Yay.
Sports ball.
Folks, I got to say, by the way, crew, I'm very impressed with everyone tonight. For two episodes, like for one, we usually go an hour and a half. We're just...
Mm-hmm. I had so much more things to say.
I actually have more things I want to say too, but don't want to go 3 hours. I mean, we could, but we're not going to. That's it for this one. We will be back next week with our review of episode 503. We will have a little bit more of a chat with Sinequa Martin Green as well as Wilson Cruz for that one. So look forward to having them back on the show, which is just still really weird and awesome to say. Can't wait for that. So for MC, for Hawk, for Eric, for Giraffe, I am Julian. Live long and prosper. What the fuck is that hand? Was that your hand? It looked like a doll. Oh my God, your hands are so smooth right now. It looks like a doll hand.
I'm Asian. Do you moisturize? My skin is always smooth. Asian skin.
I thought it was a doll.
I thought it was a doll hand. It was so smooth. Oh my God. Live long and prosper. Mushroom sarcastic Vulcan salute. Good night. Oh my God.
Thanks for beaming into our podcast today. If you want to keep the hailing frequencies open, you can subscribe on Apple and Google Podcasts, YouTube, and Spotify. Like what you hear? Put in a good word with Starfleet and leave us a 5-star review.